page 987 of the Church Bibles. For the kingdom of heaven is like a landowner who went out early in the morning to hire men to work in his vineyard. He agreed to pay them a denarius for the day and sent them into his vineyard. About the third hour, he went out and saw others standing in the marketplace doing nothing. He told them, "You also go and work in my vineyard, and I will pay you whatever is right." So they went. He went out again about the sixth hour and the ninth hour and did the same thing. About the 11th hour, he went out and found still others standing around. He asked them, "Why have you been standing here all day long doing nothing?" "Because no one has hired us," they answered. He said to them, "You also go and work in my vineyard." When evening came, the owner of the vineyard said to his foreman, "Call the workers and pay them their wages, beginning with the last ones hired and going on to the first." The workers who were hired about the 11th hour came and each received a denarius. So when those came who were hired first, they expected to receive more. But each one of them also received a denarius. When they received it, they began to grumble against the landowner. "These men who were hired last worked only 1 hour," they said, "and you have made them equal to us, who have borne the burden of the work and the heat of the day." But he answered one of them, "Friend, I'm not being unfair to you. Didn't you agree to work for a denarius? Take your pay and go. I want to give the man who was hired the last the same as I give to you. Don't I have the right to do what I want with my own money? Or are you envious because I am generous?" So the last will be first, and the first will be last. May God bless us that reading from his word. So, we are going to enter a new series. How exciting. I hear you all, the smiles on your faces. We're in Lent, and so I thought we would look at parables that Jesus spoke in the final week, because it's really interesting, the ones that he does. And really helpfully, there are 7 Sundays in Lent, and there are 7 parables that Jesus says in the last week. It's almost like he planned it. So, this is our first one. And I think it's a really, really interesting parable. I was asked to do a test Bible study on this passage for the Children's Society. One of the people in my church in Reading used to work for the Children's Society, and he said, "Would you be prepared to trial this material for me?" And I went, "Yeah, all right." So I sat down with a group of carefully selected members of the church who were going to be prepared to go with it rather than look grumpy and miserable, basically. So I said, "Well, you know," and we went through it. And I have to say that the Bible study material wasn't brilliant, because it ended up somewhere that the passage didn't. And what was even worse was my Bible study, one of the people in it became very radical. And it was almost like we ought to become a card-carrying unionist by the time we'd finished. The purpose of the parable had changed from what it was intended to be to the workers' rights. And I'm like, "Yeah, but that's got nothing to do with what the parable's talking about." If you want to use this parable to try and argue for workers' rights, I can find you much better passages to do that than this, because this is not what this is about. This is not about fair pay for fair work. It's really not, okay? And if you think that, then sorry, tough. There's a clue as to why it's not about that. It's in the first 5 words. For the kingdom of heaven. This is a parable about heaven, or the kingdom of God, or whatever you want to call it. It's not a parable about how to order your affairs as human beings. Now, before you all suddenly start worrying that I'm gone completely crazy, I do think that you should get a fair pay for a fair day's work. I'm not going to argue otherwise. what I'm just saying is this isn't what this parable is about. This parable is about the kingdom of heaven. What we have to do, though, is we have to understand some of the context. This seems like a weird context to us, because we're not used to this. Although, we only have to go back about 100 years, and it would have been a much more common ideal, or idea. And we wouldn't have to go very far, we'd just have to wander down to Southampton, if you could wander in 100 years ago, you'd just wander down to Southampton. Because the way you used to get a job, if you were a docker, was you would stand outside the gate, and you'd wait. And up on the board would be written, we need so many stevedores for this, we need so many for this, we need so many for this, we need so many people to do this, we need so many people to do this. And my grandfather was born in London, and he couldn't read or write until he got married. And I think the only reason he could read or write after he got married is because my grandmother scared him so much into learning to read and write that he did it immediately. But he couldn't read and write, but he was born in a workhouse. Now, I don't want you to feel sorry for him, but, you know, he came out all right. But because he couldn't read or write, and because he was born in a workhouse, even though he was trained as a cobbler, he didn't actually have a trade. So he had to get whatever job he could get. Latterly, he became a boiler cleaner on ships where he would go in and he would chip off all of the coke inside the boilers. Absolutely horrible job. He was quite a small man, so it was quite all right for him, I suppose. But amazing, amazing life. When he was in his early teens, early 20s, he would go and try and get a job on the docks. And he would go down there every morning. And because he couldn't read, he never knew what they wanted. But he was quite clever. So he'd stand there, and he'd nudge his mate, and he'd go, I've left my glasses at home. Can you tell me what that says up there? And eventually he'd go and get himself a job, and he would get paid for the day. Now, in ancient Israel, this is exactly what this is happening here. These are laborers. They are not employed by anyone. They are turning up hopeful to get a day's work and a day's pay. The day's pay was one denarius. That was the standard pay for a day's work. And they were hoping to get a day's work. And guess what? If they didn't get a day's work, their family didn't eat. To put it into kind of modern day context, a denarius would probably be worth now about £1. £1 a day. You're not going to get a lot of change out of that, are you? You've got to go, you've got to feed your family on what's essentially £1 a day. You're not going to go out and do something extravagant like buying bread. You'll buy flour, it's cheaper. You'll probably have unleavened bread. Did you notice that in every single culture in the world, we have this wonderful mixture of flour and water, and we call it all sorts of different things. But essentially, it's all just flat bread. Why? Because it's the cheapest thing you can make to give you any kind of sustenance, as it were. Tortillas are just flour and water, and you literally fry them. A pita bread, a naan bread, a puri, all of these are things that you just mix together with flour and water, you put them in, you puff them up, whatever it is, but actually they're all the same. The cakes that Alfred burnt were probably very similar to just some flat bread, and she was cross with him because that was the food for the family, and there may not have been a lot. These men have turned up at the first thing in the morning. We have to understand what the timings that are going on. It says the third hour, the sixth hour, the ninth hour, and then we get to the 11th hour, because you split your day into 12 and you started at 6 o'clock in the morning and you finished at 6 o'clock in the evening. So at the third hour, it's 9 o'clock in the morning. At the sixth hour, it's midday. At the ninth hour, it's 3 o'clock in the afternoon, which is why Jesus dies at the ninth hour, if anyone... It'll make sense eventually. So that's what happened. And they would go out, and first of all, he goes out first thing in the morning, and there is a vineyard that needs to be cleared. There is a harvest that needs to be reaped. And you've got to work fast, because this was a very real situation in Israel. The grapes are on the vine, and they're ripe. And if you're not careful, the next thing that happens is the rains come and you lose your entire crop. You need as many people as you can in that field clearing that crop. As many people. Some of you are old enough to remember going hop picking on holiday. The reason you had hop picking holidays is because the farmers needed people down there picking those hops, because if they didn't, they went off and they lost their entire crop, which meant that their entire family would then have nothing. Except, do you get the idea? How important it is to get those people into that field. So therefore, think about the value of the crop. Do you need that crop cleared? Does the landowner need that crop harvested? Yeah, because otherwise he's going to lose it all. And actually, that's his family that now don't have any food and don't have any money and don't have anything to get going. So you need as many people as you can in that vineyard, clearing the crop, because it's important. So you're prepared to go out, and you as a landowner, you're prepared to pay whatever, because you need your crop cleared. Maybe he's looked at the weather forecast. Thankfully, he doesn't live in Britain, because it would just be constant rain. But maybe he's looked at the weather forecast, and he's gone, oh, do you know what? If I don't get this cleared in the next couple of days, that's it. The rain's coming and the whole crop's gone. So he goes out first thing in the morning. Are you prepared to work for me for a denarius? Yeah, absolutely. I'll work for you for a denarius. Are you prepared to work? 9 o'clock in the morning, are you prepared to work for me for a denarius? Midday, are you prepared to work for me? Yeah. Are you prepared to work for me? He gets all the way to the 11th hour. He still needs his crop cleared. And he says to those men, and it's really fascinating what it says. This will give you an idea of what's going on. Listen to this. He goes out, and at the 11th hour, he says to them, why have you been standing here all day long doing nothing? He's not having a go at them. These men say, because no one's hired us. It's not like we haven't wanted to work. It's actually just no one's wanted us. And we're now desperate because we need to feed our family. And we need to feed ourselves. And if I don't get paid, that's disaster. It's disaster for me and it's disaster for my family. Do you see how important this is? There's an importance to the landowner because he wants his harvest cleared. And there's a real importance to the workers. Now, those workers that are hired at the 11th hour are probably just thankful to get anything. What a blessing to receive the pay for an entire day's work. And then you have this argument going on because he says, well, let's get everyone in. I'll pay them all that they need. I'll pay them. Start off with the last people. Give them the denarius. They must walk out and go, look at this. I've got a whole denarius. Oh, God's smiling on me today. He's poured out blessings on me. Just wow. At the last possible moment, I've been saved from destruction. At the last possible moment, I thought I was going to have to go home and say to the wife, sorry, we've got nothing tonight. But actually, I've been given some hope and salvation right at the end. Now, the guys who get hired at 6 o'clock in the morning are a bit jealous about this. I wonder why. Because they're like the children that we had today. They want their pay. And it's not fair. Okay. But they've worked to bring in the harvest. knowing for that whole day they were going to be able to eat that night. Secure in their salvation that from the beginning to the end that they were going to have enough. And the point that the landowner makes to them is, what has it got to do with you, what I do with my money? If I want to save that person, then I'll save them. If I want to pay their bill, I'll pay their bill. Surely that's up to me. And it's got really nothing to do with you because I'm giving you the same thing that I'm giving to them. Now, you're all intelligent people. I haven't got to go too far for you can work out that this is about the kingdom of God and salvation. Not just about whether you eat tonight, about whether you eat at the heavenly banquet forever. That's what this is about. But there's a warning in it. And there's hope in it. First of all, the warning. Those of us that have been around in church a long time have no right to be complacent and have no right to grumble about those that God chooses to bring into the kingdom. And those of us who are in churches that have been established for a very long time, denominations that have been around forever, have no right to go, well, that new denomination, I don't like them. They're not proper Christians. Because it's not up to us to decide who gets the pay. It's up to God. And if those people are working in the vineyard, bringing in the harvest, which is souls, if they're working there doing that, then hallelujah, that's fantastic. Slightly twisted analogy, but John Wesley was once asked, what do you do when you get money from people that, you know, give it to you and they haven't necessarily raised it by the best means? So maybe they've been doing something you don't agree with. Maybe they've, modern context. Maybe British American Tobacco decides to give us £1 million, okay? And we might go, ooh, not sure about that. Not sure I like that, okay? John Wesley's response was, give me your dirty money and I will make it clean. Now, that does sound like money laundering, but the point is actually, it's about what God can do with it. And about what God's wanting to do. It's not up to us. If INEOS decided, now we might have a view on oil drilling, but if INEOS decided to give us several £ million, because, well, not they will, because they're making a mess of Manchester United at the moment, but if they decided to give us several £ million, would we say, oh no, God doesn't want us to have that? Or would we have to seriously pray about whether that would be the right thing? And in the same way, if someone walks through that door who maybe hasn't led the greatest life and maybe doesn't look the way that we think they should, and frankly, they're a bit old, do we say to them, actually, you're beyond hope? Sorry about that. No, you don't receive the blessings of salvation. Or do we say, welcome, come and receive the gift of God? That's a really big challenge. Because I think it's interesting that Jesus puts that in the point of view of pay. Because we all of us will sit there and go, yeah, but I've worked longer than them, I should get better pay. This is not an equal pay debate either, by the way. I've worked longer for them, therefore I should get better pay. But what if Jesus had done this in the point of view of a gift? And I think it's important that he does it in pay because he's demonstrating to the disciples and to the Jewish nation and to us, you've got no right to sit and judge this because you don't get this because you and I have a contract. You get this because of my grace. I give this to you. I give you this freedom. I pay your wages, as it were. I don't have to. could fire you, then what would you do? I could get you all the way up to the pearly gates and I could say, sorry, I don't know you. Because Jesus says there'll be many who come and say, Lord, Lord, but I don't know you. Why? Because you've taken this as a contract and not a gift of grace. God pours out his blessings upon us, all of us, regardless of who we are and what we've done. God pours out his blessings on us. And it's none of my business as to who God decides to pour those blessings out on. I don't have a right to judge to say you're in and you're out. I just have to work with the blessings that God gives me. It's all of you, which is nice. You alright? Oh, good. Must be very cold back there. The point is that it's up to God. How do we engage with other people who God is calling? I said before, we need to be very careful about the words that come out of our mouths and the attitudes that we have towards others. We don't have a right to judge. By your fruit shall they know you, but I still don't have a right to judge. The only person who judges is Jesus. That's the next role that he has. But he says, I didn't come to judge the world, but to save it. That's John 3:17. That's the bit that doesn't get quoted. I didn't come to judge the world, but to save it. Now, he could judge it, but he's not come to do that at this point. He's come to save it. And if Jesus doesn't come to judge the world, why does the church think it has the right? But the hope in this is that actually Jesus is prepared to offer the hand of salvation even at the 11th hour to draw you up. Two quotes, one I only discovered this week, which I think is absolutely fantastic, and that is, it's all very well pulling people out of the river, but at some point we have to go upriver and find out why they're falling in the first place. So we need to understand that actually we spend our time trying to save people, and it's great that we do save some people at the 11th, or God saves some people at the 11th hour, but seriously, it would be good if we could get them a little bit earlier. Maybe have a few more people in the marketplace going, there's some work to do here, come and get a job. I'll hire you, it's not a problem, keep coming. Giving them that invitation to come. And the other is I think it's F.C. Sproul, and I've used this before, but I think it's one of the best quotes I've ever read. Some wish to live within the sound of church or chapel bell, but I want to run a rescue shop within a yard of hell. There is not a single person who hasn't been offered the gift of salvation through Jesus Christ. There's not a single person on this planet that Christ didn't die for on that cross. I don't care when they come to know Jesus. Let's just offer them that. A few years ago, a very dear lady to me was in hospital, and she'd said to the family and to the doctors, I don't want any more treatment. And I said, and she came and she rang me, she said, can you come and see me? And so I went in to see her, and she said, I don't want any more treatment. I'm going to tell them that tomorrow. I went, right. I said, you do know that that means that there's probably not going to be long. Yeah. Fine. It's only a lady in her 40s, which was quite distressing. And I said to her, I wouldn't be a friend if I didn't tell you that Jesus Christ died for you, forgive your sins, and that he loves you and is waiting to welcome you. I wouldn't be a friend if I didn't do that. And we then prayed together, and she accepted Jesus into her heart. The next day, I got a phone call from her husband saying she's gone. Now, I mourn all of the gifts that she could have given, because she was a fantastic force of nature. But she's with God in heaven, and he probably needs someone to organise him, because that's what she would do. But actually, I rejoice in the fact that she had the opportunity to turn it around just at the last minute. Now, I'm not suggesting that you all do that. Let's try and get in before, you know, the last minute. That would be great. But actually, just, could I be sad to know that she's received a reward that I accepted 30 odd years ago? No. I'm overjoyed because she gets to receive the same thing as me. And that's what Jesus is trying to get across to the disciples when he talks about the workers in the vineyard. We're going to stand and sing Amazing Grace.